Laudato Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Monday, July 12th, U.S. sends FBI agents to investigate the assassination of Haiti's president. Chad's bishops call for national unity as France plans to withdraw troops from the Sahel region, and Caritas Nepal swings into action as the country continues its fight against COVID-19. In the Vatican, I'm Father Benedict Mayaki. A team of FBI agents and officials from the Department of Homeland Security, but no troops, will be visiting Haiti, which is in crisis and turmoil following the assassination of its president, Jovenel Moïse, and the wounding of its first lady. James Blair's report.
Two of the alleged 17 assassins detained are U.S. Haitians and the holders of U.S. passports. It's yet to be discovered who's the mastermind behind the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse and the injuring of his wife Martine, who survived and is undergoing treatment in Miami for multiple gunshot wounds. A group of Haitian political parties has signed a document appointing head of the Senate Joseph Lambert, the interim president, and Ariel Henry, whom Moïse nominated as Prime Minister less than 24 hours before he was murdered. But supposedly outgoing Prime Minister Claude Joseph, who declared a 15-day state of siege, claims to be in charge. Claude Joseph says President Moïse was tortured by the ex-Colombian soldiers who gouged out one of his eyes before they shot him 12 times. It's hoped that elections could be held in September, but with the prevailing instability, this seems unlikely as voters are wary of violence on the streets and what could occur at polling booths. The unanswered question is just who set in motion this plot, which took at least 3 months to formulate, trying to wrest control of the Western Hemisphere's poorest and most troubled nation, a ruthless attempted coup aimed directly against its fragile democracy. For Vatican Radio, James Blair's reporting.
Thousands of Cubans joined street protests from Havana to Santiago on Sunday in the biggest anti-government demonstrations on the communist-run island in decades, calling for President Miguel Díaz-Canel to step down. Cubans have been angered by the collapse of the economy, as well as by restrictions on civil liberties and the authorities' handling of the pandemic, with record infections in recent days. The protesters are also demanding a faster coronavirus vaccination program. Images posted on social media showed what appeared to be security forces detaining and beating some of the protesters. Other posts showed people overturning police cars and looting some state-owned shops which price their goods in foreign currencies. For many Cubans, these shops are the only way they can buy basic necessities, but prices are high. The communist-run country has been experiencing a worsening economic crisis for 2 years, which the government blames mainly on U.S. sanctions and the pandemic, while its detractors cite incompetence and a Soviet-style one-party system. France is to withdraw more than 2,000 troops from an anti-extremism force in Africa's Sahel region by early next year. As Linda Bordono reports, the French president announced the pullout, saying he has decided to pivot the country's military presence to specialized regional forces instead.
President Emmanuel Macron followed up on an announcement he made last month to reduce his country's military presence in Africa's Sahel region, most of it formerly colonized by France. He said the French Barkhane force, operating in Mali, Chad, Niger, Burkina Faso and Mauritania, is no longer adapted to the needs in the area. The arid Sahel region between the Sahara Desert to the north and the Sudanian savanna to the south stretches across the continent from the Atlantic Ocean to the Red Sea. It is currently rocked by instability and violence, with extremist organizations such as Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda and Islamic State perpetrating attacks and abductions. The French leader insisted that his country was not abandoning African partners and would keep helping them fight groups linked to IS militants. But he reaffirmed the French military will shut down Barkhane bases in Timbuktu, Tessalit and Kidal in northern Mali over the next 6 months. He said the military will start to reconfigure its presence in the coming weeks to focus particularly on the rest of border area where Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger meet. Macron said France's largest overseas military mission in the future will focus on neutralizing extremist operations and strengthening and training local armies. I'm Linda Bordoni.
The Episcopal Conference of Chad, in a statement, has stressed the importance of including all state actors in dialogue for national unity. As Sister Cynthia Oswago reports, the bishops also reaffirmed the church's commitment to working in the service of unity, justice and peace in the landlocked country.
Bishops in Chad have called for an inclusive national dialogue that brings together stakeholders in the nation's socio-political life to work together toward peace. In a recent statement, the Chadian Bishops' Conference highlighted that the lack of real and sincere dialogue between Chadian socio-political actors has long plagued national life and is at the heart of current debates. They further noted that the sudden April 19 demise of the Chadian president Idriss Deby at the hands of military forces has further brought the crisis in the North Central African nation to the fore, necessitating this inclusive national dialogue. Deby, who ruled Chad for 30 years, was killed while on a visit to the front lines against a surging rebellion. He had just been announced winner of his fifth presidential election, and his death created a vacuum in the country's political scene. Following his death, a transitional council of military officers led by Deby's son, Mahamat Idriss Deby, has been overseeing the nation's 18-month transition period. The council has also published a charter that defines the role of members expected to be appointed to the National Transitional Council. The charter has been largely rejected by the Chadian political opposition. In their collective statement, CET pointed at the setting up of the committee in charge of appointing the members of the future National Transition Council, expressing concern that the council does not seem to be representative of all the aspirations of the Chadian people and is already the target of much criticism. The bishops thus highlight the urgent need to give the ministry in charge of dialogue and reconciliation a free hand and to give it all the means to organize this national inclusive and reconciliatory dialogue. Concluding, CET reaffirmed the church's commitment and availability to contribute in the different phases of the transition in service of the cause of unity, justice, and peace for the well-being of all Chadian citizens. I am Sister Mary Cynthia Oswago.
Shops were looted overnight, a section of highway was closed, and stick-wielding protesters marched through Johannesburg on Sunday as sporadic violence following the jailing of former South African President Jacob Zuma spread. The unrest had mainly been concentrated in Zuma's home province of KwaZulu-Natal, where he started serving a 15-month sentence for contempt of court on Wednesday night. Zuma's recent incarceration has angered his supporters and exposed rifts within the ANC party. Meanwhile, South African police said criminals were taking advantage of the anger to steal and cause damage. President Cyril Ramaphosa said on Sunday that there was no justification for violence and it was damaging efforts to rebuild the country amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The social action arm of the Catholic Church in Nepal has launched a joint effort with US-based Catholic Relief Services to provide much-needed medical supplies to the country's hospitals in the current COVID-19 crisis. The Caritas Nepal scheme that will run from July to September aims to provide 20 hospitals in 14 districts in Nepal with medical supplies. Robin Gomes has that story.
Caritas Nepal will supply hospitals with items such as oxygen cylinders, oxygen concentrators, pulse oximeters, face masks and personal protective equipment. On Thursday, Caritas Nepal delivered a consignment of medical items to Paropkar Maternity and Women's Hospital in the capital, Kathmandu. A similar consignment was handed over to Mechi Hospital in Japa district of eastern Nepal. Devendra Pokharel, a regional manager of Caritas Nepal, said they believe the equipment will help hospitals that have struggled to serve patients when the second wave of the pandemic triggered a high rate of infections and patients with severe respiratory problems suffered amid a shortage of oxygen. Since last year, Caritas Nepal has carried out a range of assistance programs for affected communities in 23 districts of the country, with funding from partners and donors, including CRS. Since the outbreak of the pandemic last year, Caritas Nepal has established 150 units of hand-washing stations in rural and urban municipalities, distributed 10,000 units of COVID-19 safety kits to individuals, health workers, health and quarantine centers, and humanitarian workers. It provided food relief to over 7,000 households and to more than 24,000 smallholder farming households with agricultural input. In addition, it carried out a COVID-19 precautionary awareness campaign that reached out to 100,000 people. Hindus make up for more than 81% of Nepal's population. Buddhists account for 9%, Muslims 4.4%, and Christians 1.4%. Nepal has only about 8,000 Catholics, but an estimated 3 to 5 million Protestant and Evangelical Christians belong to about 12,000 churches, mostly based in the poor rural heartland of Nepal. The government has faced criticism for negligence and unpreparedness amid a sluggish vaccination drive as the highly contagious Delta variant wreaked havoc in neighboring India. Data provided by the Health Ministry on Thursday indicate that only about 3% of the country's some 30 million population has been fully vaccinated so far. I am Robin Gomes.
The Holy See Press Office said on Monday that Pope Francis will remain for a few more days at Rome's Gemelli Hospital to complete his recovery. Just yesterday, the Pope made his first public appearance since his surgery just over a week ago. Thaddeus Jones tells us more.
Pope Francis has completed the course of his post-surgical operation treatment and will remain at Rome's Gemelli Hospital a few more days in order to best optimize the medical and rehabilitation therapy, according to the director of the Holy See Press Office, Matteo Bruni. In his daily medical bulletin, he explained that on Sunday before the recitation of the Angelus, the Pope met with patients of the nearby oncology ward with members of their families. The patients later accompanied the Pope on the 10th floor terrace for the Angelus, as seen during the coverage of the event. Afterwards, the Pope greeted patients on the floor, talking briefly with the medical nursing staff. In the afternoon, he celebrated Mass in the private chapel with the staff who assist him daily. The statement concludes noting that the Pope shared his joy with those around him over the victory of the Argentine and Italian national football teams. In his conversations with them, he offered his thoughts on the meaning and values of sports and on the capacity in sporting activity to be able to accept any result, even defeat, saying, "Only in this way, in the face of life's difficulties, can one always put oneself on the line, fighting without giving up, with hope and trust." Just the day before, on Sunday, Pope Francis made his first public appearance following his surgery a week earlier. From the balcony of the 10th floor window overlooking the crowds below, he appeared with the children who were receiving treatment, as just mentioned earlier. The Pope expressed his joy at being able to keep the weekly Sunday Angelus appointment and noted his profound gratitude to all, saying he's been deeply moved by the closeness and the support of their prayers, and he thanked everyone from the bottom of his heart. In conclusion, the Pope asked all of us to pray for the sick, especially those in the most difficult health situations, underlining, "May no one be left alone. May everyone receive the anointing of listening, closeness, and care." I'm Thaddeus Jones.
That brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, we invite you to visit our web portal at www.vaticannews.va. My thanks go to the sound engineers and technicians in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Father Benedict Mayaki.